What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Welcome into the Garden Hotline. We have Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping here to answer your questions. We are an at-your-service program, so that's what we're here to do, is take your questions at 314-436-7900. Again, the Garden Hotline is 314-436-7900. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. How's it going?
Yesterday was really hot, but the next few days are actually pretty decent for this time of year.
Is it? I haven't looked at the weather, but I do know yesterday was really, really hot.
It was out and about. Upper 90s.
I was out and about quite a bit at work yesterday, and it was definitely a sweaty day. So I'm glad to hear that the temperatures are coming down.
About 10 degrees cooler, honestly, than yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, it was 97 yesterday. It's 87 today.
I should probably pay more attention to the weather because my job is really affected by it. But
gardening is affected by weather?
Yeah, just a little bit. But yeah, normally on top of the weather, but I guess I haven't been paying much attention to it, but I am excited to hear that.
Yeah. So what happens right now at Pointer Landscaping as we get to mid-July?
We are still, you know, I keep waiting and waiting and waiting for like the summer slow to happen, but it really hasn't. So we're staying really, really busy. You know, we're doing a lot of design and planning right now, trying to get things together and organize because before you know it, fall's going to be here. I love talking about fall. I'm ready for the relief of fall and the change of jobs that we need to do or get to do in the fall. But I am ready for that. But we're just starting to plan that, really, doing a lot of taking stock of what has happened so far this year. You know, I think that we did talk a little bit in the spring about, journaling and having a garden journal, and actually got mine out And we do it a lot this time of year for our clients, is really, you know, take stock of what happened in our gardens this year, what we could have done better, what how the weather affected things, what plants performed well, what I might want to move in the fall in my garden, things like that. So we're just really taking a breath, or trying to take a breath, and evaluate what has happened and what needs to happen.
I start thinking about fall in May. Just so you know.
It's like, you know, whenever, right after I eat breakfast, I'm already thinking about lunch. And then at lunch, I'm already thinking about what I'm going to eat for dinner. It's kind of like that.
The number is 314-436-7900. Let's go to the phones right now. Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Yes. We have a hosta and daylily and fern garden, and it's over 30 years old, and everything is starting to die off. And we're at the age we just can't take care of it anymore. Is there something that will kill everything? Weeds, grass, plants?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chemical that will kill.
Is there something that will kill everything?
Just kills everything. Yeah, I mean, you know, those plants that you mentioned, hosta, daylily, fern, you know, if they've been around for a while, they can, you know, really get crowded in the beds and kind of get overcrowded and start having some issues and having some dieback. And I also, you know, can understand not having, you know, the ability or time to continue taking care of a garden. So, you know, this is a common thing that we see, that people, you know, that have had gardens in their landscape or at their house that can no longer kind of manage those, or they're getting too big or too much, need to start reducing some of those things. So, you know, you can hand dig them out. You can, you know, I always, when I start getting too many.
Not at my age.
Yeah. So the other thing is to, you know, you can spray with an herbicide, you know, to be more effective. You know, you're going to have to do a lot of applications. Sometimes when we're eradicating plants like that in a big area, we'll string trim or cut them back, which again doesn't seem like you know, that's in your
wheelhouse.
Yeah. So, you know, spraying is, you know, you could use anything like a Roundup. There's a lot of products at your hardware store or big box stores that are like a ground clear that are a little bit stronger, maybe might work a little bit faster than a Roundup type product. But it's probably going to take several applications. And then you're going to have to also think about cleanup, you know. You'll have to cut all that back, or at least rake it up. And then what are you going to do with that area? You know, once
well,
all
that's
that...
the next question is, I'm going to, I'll do this in the spring.
Yep.
What you said with the Roundup, or there's something I know it's called Kills All.
Yep.
And, but next spring I want to put sod down. Now, does that, all that chemical still be in the ground, or?
So it's going to depend on what you use. You know, there are products that stay in the ground and stay in the soil for a significant amount of time, up to a year sometimes, or longer. So just make sure when you're purchasing that pesticide that, you know, it's not something that stays in the soil. I'm almost always looking for something that's foliar, you know, like a Roundup type is something that you spray on the leaves or the foliage of the plant, and it's taken up that way by the plant and doesn't necessarily stick around in the soil. And, you know, it could also be, you know, spring is great if you want to do the sod route, but plants actually more effectively can be killed back in the fall because, you know, they're taking all of that energy back into their root system. So they pull all of that pesticide back into their roots, and it's actually easier to kill them back. And it's easy to get a lawn established if you're putting, you know, if you're thinking about sod in the spring. You could think about seed in the fall, and that could be a cheaper route. But fall is also an excellent time. I understand about timing if you're looking to do it in the spring. But if I'm thinking about killing plants, I almost always am thinking about, you know, timing wise doing it in the fall, because it can be more effective and easier when you're spraying.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks for calling in, Bob. Let's go to Mike next. Mike, good morning. You're on the air with Michelle.
Hey, good morning. I planted a hydrangea last year, first time I've done that, and it's gotten one big bloom, pretty nice, but it's not a bright, bright pink. And it's behind its own leaves from the stalks that are in front of it. I was wondering if I spread those leaves and expose that bloom to more sun, would it have more color?
It might have a little bit more color. You know, on these types of hydrangea, this is, I would assume it's a hydrangea macrophylla type, which sometimes has a pink or blue bloom on it. If you planted it last year, and even depending on when last year, spring or fall, and it also doesn't always matter, but those types of hydrangeas will set buds for the flower for this year. They start setting those buds in the summer, and by wintertime, the flower buds for the next year are already set and in place. So if it's newly planted and that plant sends all of its energy into getting itself rooted in, which is what we want, then it may not send a bunch of energy to making those buds. And then in St. Louis, we also have that type of hydrangea can be a little iffy sometimes if we have, you know, like a harsh winter and those flower buds freeze, or in the late spring, as those buds start swelling, we get a freeze or a late snow or something like that. Those buds on that type of hydrangea can be killed back, and then we don't really get much of a bloom that year. So I suspect for your newly established hydrangea, it could be a mixture of both. So I wouldn't worry too terribly much that you only have that one bloom, or even about the color of that bloom just yet, because your plant is still, you know, a young plant at this time. So for me, I would focus more on getting those roots established and, you know, consistent, regular watering. And, you know, by the second or third season, you'll probably have a bigger display, more blooms and more consistent flower color.
Yeah. One other thing, I know you've addressed this problem, but I hadn't had a problem with my 25-year-old lilac until recently, where the leaves are turning brown, and some of the leaves are, and I just wondered, what did you say? It was a fungus or a bug?
It's probably a fungus. You know, that's really common with our lilacs, and this year, even last year, we are especially fighting a lot of fungal issues. You know, one of the ways on a lilac to help that, and sometimes it doesn't always get it year to year. It doesn't always get it as bad as we're seeing this year. Sometimes it's just like a slight white kind of dusty look on the leaves. And then this year it seems to be affecting plants a little bit more and can make the leaves brown out a little bit. But it's most likely a powdery mildew fungus. And there's not a lot that you can do about it at this point, other than potentially helping with airflow. You know, a lot of older lilacs can get really crowded at the base, or, you know, the branches become really thick up top. So, you know, doing a little bit of pruning to thin out some of those older canes or older branches to kind of help with some airflow and light penetration. And then in the dormant time before everything leafs out, you can do like a dormant oil spray or a horticulture oil to kind of help with that fungus throughout the season.
Okay. Yeah, I did that right after. It's just started browning right after I did cut some of the big center stalks out of it just to get it more airflow, and then it all of a sudden showed up. But, hey, one other thing. I got some mandevillas, and, boy, they're beautiful this year. Except for one, it keeps making buds, but the flowers don't open. I was just wondering if there's anything I can add to the soil to make this one. I've got them all, pretty much a lot of them in the same area, and have no problem except for this one. And it's got buds. It's not weak or anything, but it just doesn't want to open the flowers on it.
You know, you might try a little bit of fertilizer, you know, could be anything, could also be bugs. There's a bug, a mite that will be on our plants or the buds of our plants. Sometimes they're too small to even see, that can affect the buds from opening. But I would try that, maybe some neem oil and a little bit of fertilizer.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your service.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate you. 314 936-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping answering your questions this morning at 104.1 FM, KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. Welcome into the Garden Hotline. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is here to answer your questions. Your gardening needs, bushes, plants, front yard, backyard, side yard, whatever, trees. Am I leaving anything? Flowers?
I don't like it when people say bushes. They're shrubs.
Oh, okay. Shrubs. Sorry.
Technical term.
Shrubbery.
Yeah.
Can I say that? All right. The number is 314-436-7900. And let's say hello to Vicky. Good morning, Vicky.
Hi. I was just curious, had a question about some fruit trees, mostly the apple trees. They are about 2 years old, but every year we get some, like a orange fungus, I guess, on it. Is there a good spray for that, that we could prevent that from happening? And how often should we spray them?
Oh, so these fruit trees are my current learning, my learning subject and my current issues. So I'm happy to try to answer this, but just trying to preface this by saying I'm still learning about the fruit trees. I'm having the same issue. I have an apple tree in my front yard that I planted 2 years ago. So actually, this is its third season living with me. And I have a peach tree that's the same. I planted at the same time. I had another apple tree, but I killed it. So I'm having the same problem. And in fact, I think that it's going to be, you know, so I've sprayed mine several times. I did some dormant sprays. I've also had some issues with bugs like aphids. So I've sprayed the bugs and had to prune those out. So all I have been using so far, and again, this hasn't been super successful for me, is that I did a dormant oil. Again, before it leafed out, I sprayed that three times before it leafed out every couple of weeks. And that was just a dormant horticulture oil. And then I switched over to a neem oil for just spot spraying things like the bugs and, you know, trying to hopefully help combat some of the fungal issues that I was having. And now my fruit is falling off. And, you know, I was like, look at all these apples, and now they're on the ground. So I think that it's really about consistent watering. And then spraying, making sure you're spraying your products really regularly. And again, I cannot overemphasize how much fungal issues that we have been fighting this year and last year. So the last 2 years since you've been an apple grower, that it has been one of these two last years, spring into summer, have been some of the hardest fungal years I've had to fight in my horticulture career. So I think that that is also a contributing factor. And now another thing that will help is, we talked about it a little bit with the lilac, is these fruit trees and trees and plants that are susceptible to fungus need to have regular pruning, so that you can have light penetrating and helping to dry off that water that sits on the leaves, and it helps with airflow and circulation to try to get that water kind of dried off of things as fast as possible. And then, you know, any future plants, you know, making sure they're in a morning sun, full sun situation, and that can help. So I think, you know, this is kind of the same thing that I say to people about deer damage and deer eating their plants. It's really about consistency and making sure you get that product out there, because it comes off of the leaves. Every time it rains, you know, it dissipates, and you just have to do it really regularly. So
okay.
Copper fungicide is what I've been using, and neem oil. And if anybody out there is successfully growing these fruit trees and not having an issue, I'm happy to learn from you. So feel free to call in and let us know if you have any other tips or tricks to keeping this fungus off of our fruit trees. But good luck to you. I hope it goes well. I really do. And if you figure out a good thing, you call me and tell me, because I'm still learning.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Vicky. 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. So is that, you said I had an apple tree, but I killed it.
Yeah.
I mean, Was it the fungus?
No, I just probably didn't water it. I kill it. Listen, I don't have irrigation at my house and I'm busy. And by the time I get home from tending to other people's garden and worrying about their plants, I don't always, you know, want to do it at my house. So I kill a lot of things.
Yeah, it's not a, I guess as a gardener, that's really not the quality you want, but
you know, it doesn't hurt my feelings. It's just part of it. You know, if you're a gardener, you're going to kill stuff. It's just a one big like science experiment, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
I like that. I like that. One big science experiment. 314-436-7900 is the number to call to ask your question of Michelle. You were talking earlier about looking forward to the fall. What are you most looking forward to? I mean, besides the weather change, I mean, in terms of your garden or gardening in general.
I was going to say the weather. So now that you've taken that from me, I guess I'll come up with something else. You know, I think there's something so great about every season in the garden. If you're doing it right and you've planted something that's either blooming at different times or the fall, obviously we have fall color. But I have so many things in my garden that start to really put on the show later in the season. So I just always love all of the shifts throughout the season in my garden and, you know, having things like a Amsonia, which is a perennial that is just a regular old green, just flushes and turns a bright yellow and puts on that show that, you know, you haven't seen all year, but I just love those seasonal shifts and the way that our garden changes. So I'm looking forward to the cooler temperatures to be sure. But I love, you know, just how the garden looks and feels in the fall as well.
Michelle Reeser-West, Pointer Landscaping. She's answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Good morning, Mike. You are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I got a question. I bought my tomatoes this year. I live in a suburban area. I've always had a tomato garden and pretty good results. But because of some wetness, I decided to raise the bed after last year because of some root rot. So anyway, I went and got about 7 pickup loads of compost topsoil mix from a local topsoil place. And I usually buy my plants at the farmer's market, not from the same person every year. So I didn't get the plants I wanted this year. I always like the big boys and early girls, but I got some Goliaths and some couple others and planted my plants, and none of them. I got a little late start later than usual, middle of May, but none of those plants are producing any tomatoes. They're producing flowers. And I've read about pollination. I've gone out there and shook the plants a little bit. But I'm just not getting any luck getting any tomatoes. And I'm wondering, where would you look first? Should I have some soil tested? Could it be the plants themselves? Any thoughts?
I mean, it could be so many things. You know, again, I can't stress enough how weird our weather has been. You know, tomato plants really start thriving when that hot weather gets here. And for us, we really had a really long, extended, cool spring. So a lot of tomato plants didn't get really up and going and flowering until much later. And I actually learned recently that tomatoes can't be pollinated when daytime temperatures are over 90 degrees. And I think that's the same with like cucumber type plants as well. And it's because the pollen gets really sticky in the heat and the bees and the pollinators can't transport it from flower to flower. So that could be an issue if you didn't have a lot of flowers until after the heat got here. They're not getting pollinated in that way. But you did also talk about switching soil, which can be a huge contributing factor to you know, setting fruit and things like that. So, you know, plants like organic matter, vegetables really, really, really like organic matter. Most vegetables are super heavy feeders and need a lot of nutrients in order to have a good fruit set and a good harvest. So I think, you know, a soil test is almost always where I start when I'm having issues with things. You know, I don't know what the blend was in terms of, you know, the soil that you bought. You know, a 70-30 mix in a lot of places, you know, may only have, you know, 7 or 8% organic matter in it when it's all said and done, even if it's a 70-30 mix. You know, 50-50 garden mix is even better, has a higher organic matter content. So, you know, there may be some nutrients that you need to add to that soil. You know, and there may not be a lot of nutrients or things in the soil when you get it straight from a nursery. So adding some things back in, some additional compost or things like that might help. But a soil test is super easy. It's really inexpensive. So that could be a great place to start too. And then we have had some really inconsistent rain. We've had a lot of, you know, wet times followed by some dry times. So as much consistent watering as you can helps with setting that fruit.
Okay. So you recommend maybe a University of Missouri Extension Center
Correct.
For a soil test?
That's where I like to go. I think it's super simple. You drop it off and send it off, and within a couple weeks you get an analysis back. And if you tell them it's for a veggie garden, they'll tell you exactly what you need to put in there.
The only other thing is I put a little bit of a horse manure, mixed it in with the topsoil on each hole when I dug that. So, I mean, I don't know if that's going to be inaccurate if I go take a soil sample out of the middle where there's no horse manure or what is it?
So depending on the size of your bed, you need to take a sample from multiple places. Pull back your, you know, you need to get it down a little bit lower because it's not just the top part of the soil. I don't know how, this is a raised veggie bed, so that might change things. But yeah, take samples from, you know, if it's like a 4x4 bed, I would take samples from maybe 4 or 5 different spots and then mix that all together and then take that. So you'll want it from the entire raised veggie bed.
Okay. All right. Mix it all together. Don't keep them separate. Mix it all together.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your advice.
Good luck.
Thanks for calling in, Mike. It is 314-436-7900, the Garden Hotline, to ask your question of Michelle Reeser-West. We will continue with your phone calls in just a moment. 104.1 FM, KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut.
Be an artist.
Be an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views. The cool waterfall mist during a hot hike. And the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. AllTrails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors. With more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Garden Hotline on 104.1 FM KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow with Michelle Reeser-West, who is answering your questions this morning about gardening topics. One of them right now might be watering. You told me off the air that that's an issue right now, and it has something to do with fungus?
Yeah. I know I keep talking about fungus the last few times I've been here. It's like a really, I'm like obsessed with fungus, but it's really an issue this year. So, you know, I'm getting a ton of phone calls from people. Part of what we do at Pointers when we install new plantings, you know, we reach out and we want our plantings and our designs to look good. So we offer advice or, you know, we'll send a horticulturist. Usually it's myself out to walk with clients and help them take care of plants. And a lot of times right after the planting, they say, no, we got it. Thanks for the watering information. But now we're, you know, a month, a few weeks out from a lot of our plantings. And I'm getting so many phone calls that say my plants look awful. What do I need to do? And a lot of that has been, like I said, these fungal issues that are popping up on the plants. And so the plants are looking sad, or they have some spotting or yellowing leaves. So people tend to think, oh, I need to water my plants. And that's not always the case. In fact, a lot of times it's not the case, especially with people with like irrigation systems or who are regularly watering their plants. You know, and that tends to happen a lot with these new plantings. People will way overwater things, and then the plant really is dying. So it's important, you know, consistent watering is really important. And it's one of the hardest things about my job, really, is people say, well, how much do I need to water? And that's a really impossible situation for me because every yard is different. You know, there's different soil types. You know, if it's a house that was just built recently, which we do a lot, you know, that soil is probably really compacted and doesn't have good drainage. So if I tell that person to water X amount of times a week and there's no drainage, then we're killing the plant. So, you know, watching how much you're watering and watching the soil and really, you know, checking that soil to see if it's wet. You know, there are things like moisture meters people buy. I don't typically use those, but it's kind of like a probe that you can stick into the ground that tells you how wet your soil is. But it's really important to let your plants kind of dry out a little bit between watering. So if you go out to water, especially your new plants, and the soil is still wet, they probably don't need to be watered at that time because plants typically like to have a little bit of drying out time. Most plants don't like to sit in wet soil. So that's a big thing to really look at your soil and don't just assume that plants need watering. Because honestly, it's a really silly thing because the plant that is underwatered can often look like a plant that is overwatered. Like it's just some similar symptoms of like yellowing leaves or brown spots at the tip. So, you know, checking that soil is super important. You know, watering at the correct time of day. You know, we always recommend trying to water in the mornings and watering the root ball, not necessarily the leaves. I will be driving around or see so many people out watering with their hand sprayers, and even irrigation systems do it. They just spray water everywhere and it gets all the water on the leaves. And that contributes to fungus. I mean, the longer water sits on the leaves throughout the morning and it starts heating up, then that's just kind of like a breeding ground for fungal issues. And we also get root rot. If the ground is constantly moist, I mean, a lot of plants don't like that and they can get that root rot or crown rot. And that's also another fungal thing. So there's so many funguses that are happening now. So yeah, just answering these watering questions with my client is taking up a lot of time. But the best advice I can give is that you just have to watch your soil and, you know, wait for it to dry out a little bit before you water again. And that's not an answer most people like. They want a perfect equation or, you know, like, tell me to water three times a week for 20 minutes, but that's not always how things work. You know, especially with these different plants are different sizes, have different watering needs. Like a tree has a giant root ball and giant root system. Even a new tree has a pretty big root ball that won't dry out as fast as, say, like a 1 gallon perennial that you put in the ground. So that smaller plant that you've put in the ground might need to be watered more frequently as it's getting established than a tree does. So there's all of these factors with watering, and it's a little bit it's just more complicated than people think. And I think it's the hardest thing to get right in your garden, especially when things are getting established. And I mentioned earlier, I don't have irrigation at my house, and really the only thing I'm watering right now are my veggies and the things in pots. It's probably a problem because I did plant a few things this year. Hopefully those make it through, but you have to be tough to make it in my yard. So
you have to be tough.
Yeah. So you might get neglected a lot. So, you know, just paying attention. It's not just something that you should just go out there and blindly water things. It should be a little bit more thoughtful, especially when you're trying to establish your new plants.
Well, there's a lot to think about there in terms of the soil versus the leaves and the fungi.
The fungi. The fungus among us.
Yeah, the fungus among us that might appear because of the overwatering. Or did you say also underwatering can cause that? Sure. Oh my gosh.
It's so silly. I mean, if you underwater a plant, it can get droopy and the leaves can turn yellow. If you overwater a plant, it can get droopy and the leaves can turn yellow. You know, I have the same problem with succulents. I swear to you that the same amount of water it takes to keep a succulent happy is the exact amount of water it takes to kill a succulent. So it's watering is, you know, it's tricky. And knowing your plants, like some plants you say, you know, like there are plants and trees that love water and want to be watered more regularly and some that don't. So, you know, knowing your plants and what they want and what they need.
But to boil it down, it comes down to the soil, right? And the appearance of the soil.
Yeah. When you're checking your plant, you know, I will pull back my mulch and you can, you know, stick your finger and touch the soil and see if it's wet. For perennials and things like that, it needs to stay wet in the first, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 inches to really help out those plants. If they're shrubs or trees, you need to go down a little bit further. That's why sometimes people like to use those. There's like a soil moisture meter that have these two like metal stakes that you stick in the ground that can get a little bit further down in there to get deeper into the soil than what I would do with my finger. But so those can be helpful for people too. But really, if the soil looks pretty wet, it's probably wet, but you have to make sure it's deep into the soil. It can't be. That's what a lot of people do too, is make the mistake of just throwing some water on there with the hose really quickly, but that soil needs to be wet really far down into it to be effective. So quick watering is rarely effective. You really need to do a slow watering over time as opposed to like a really fast shot of water, which is tends to be what I do because I'm in a hurry and I don't have time and I just throw the hose on it real quick and hope that things are fine. But if you can do a slow watering, put a sprinkler out, put some drip hoses out. You know, for new trees, we often do watering bags. Those are really helpful because you can fill up these bags and they slowly drip over time. So it kind of makes it foolproof as long as you're filling them back up.
Like
so,
an IV?
Yeah, it's like a little bit of an IV.
All right, a gardening IV. I like that. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is here to answer your questions. And the number to call in and ask yours is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. We'll be back with your phone calls in just a moment. It is the Garden Hotline. Michelle Reeser-West here answering your questions. Lori is up next. The number is 314-436-7900. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
How's it going, Lori? What's your question?
My question is, I bought a lovely spiderwort this spring and potted it at home, and it has looked horrible ever since. It has not bloomed again, and the tips keep getting real brown, and it gets little buds on it, but then they just kind of dry up.
Spiderwort, do you never got a bloom at all on it?
Only when I bought it.
And you planted it this year?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of times in this first year of planting, it's really just about keeping it alive. And I don't always worry too much about bloom or anything like that. Even the first two, 3 seasons. I think Spiderwort should do well for you by next season, but it's also okay. One that often doesn't look that good this time of year. So after it flowers, sometimes it starts looking a little bit raggedy, almost like a daylily would, you know, like after the daylily flowers yeah. and the leaves start to get brown and gross. And if you kind right. of cut those back or clean them up, then it'll send a new flush of growth out. The spiderwort okay. will do the same thing. So, you could even cut all of it back to like 2 inches, maybe not this first year because it's still establishing, but once it is established, spiderwort's one that once it starts looking really rough, like we just often cut it back and let it flush out new growth. So then at least you have some nice yeah. foliage. It's not going to rebloom for you, okay. but it will look a lot nicer in the garden after even like as soon as like a week or two after you cut it back, it'll at least look like a really nice foliage plant as opposed to looking
okay.
like brown and dried out, very much like a daylily would.
Yeah, it's sad looking right now.
Well, for it's this bad. Year, just keep it watered. Try to keep it alive. Okay, you know, maybe thin out some of the stuff that looks bad. You know, because there could be fungus okay. or other things on it. But yeah, that's definitely what I would do.
All right, that's what I'll do. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, Lori. Up next, we have Rosemary. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. I have 2 very large 50-year-old sweet gum trees, and they are so loaded with sweet gum balls that in the past week, 2 branches have crashed down. And I'm looking up at this overloaded trees and wondering, should we just let it go or should we have them cut?
So, you know, sweet gums are, you're so lucky to have all those sweet gum balls that you constantly have to deal with and clean up.
Don't even mention it.
I know. It's really a shame because the tree itself is typically, you know, it's a gorgeous tree. It has a cool leaf shape. It has amazing fall colors. One of my favorite fall color trees all the time, right. every year, consistently great fall color. But those darn, and then it stops there because it's such a frustrating tree for a lot of people. So, you know, there are years, they call them mast years, M-A-S-T, and it's oaks do it. The sweet gums do it where every few years they just have just a huge crop of acorns or sweet gum balls or things like that. So it might be that we're having that with the sweet gums. And it's actually really interesting. I was just talking to a colleague of mine about when the tornado went through, you know, there's a street over that was really right in the middle of the tornado activity, and it had you know, the canopy of most of the trees were demolished, but the remaining trees, the trees that were least affected, were these sweet gum trees. So on this particular street that my colleague was on, the only thing that remained was those sweet gums. So we do have to go to break. I can continue talking about this when we come back. You're listening to KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
The number to call to ask your question of Michelle Reeser-West is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. And before the top of the hour, we had a call from Rosemary asking about sweet gum trees, and we want to continue that conversation here briefly before we get to the next call.
Yeah, so, you know, we were talking about Rosemary had, you know, some sweet gum trees, older sweet gum trees that had broken branches. And just to kind of continue what I said, when that tornado came through, a lot of those sweet gum trees were really strong and didn't have a lot of damage. And within the last couple of weeks, you know, these sweet gums have really got loaded up with the gumballs. And when we've had this, these rains in the last, you know, a few days ago, and then a little bit the week before that, the weight of the sweet gums and the added weight of the rain and some of the wind has broken a lot of sweet gum branches around town. I have a lot of clients, a few clients that were having this problem. I've seen them around town. where the sweet gum branches that can be a little bit brittle have broken off just from the weight of the sweet gums and that little bit of rain and wind that we had. So a common thing to happen. So what to do about that, Rosemary, is going to just really depend on the overall health of your sweet gums. It's going to depend on how badly those branches were broken. At minimum, you'll need to get those branches removed, potentially clean up the broken cut. You know, where that branch broke off, it's probably a jagged wound. And if possible, getting that to be a little bit cleaner so the tree can heal that wound a lot easier. You know, and as far as, you know, overall long term, should you keep these trees or remove them? I mean, some of that is going to be personal preference. You know, if the arborist, you have an arborist come out and evaluate and they can clean up those cuts and potentially even thin out some of those branches, weaker branches or branches that got overloaded, you know, thinning that out could help the overall health. But I think, you know, that's, if the tree is overall healthy, after that, it's going to be a personal choice for you to, you know, whether you're going to remove them or continue to deal with the, you know, the mess of those gumballs and potential for breakage in the future. But I will say sweet gum trees, other than the sweet gumballs, which are a big nuisance, are typically pretty good trees. So my recommendation really is to get an arborist out. I wouldn't, you know, I always try to recommend a certified arborist, not just a tree guy. You can have the tree guy come do the work, but if you're wanting some kind of an analysis on your tree or, you know, some health information on the tree, having a certified arborist out to make an evaluation of that, and they could give you a better answer based on the overall health of the tree. But, you know, 50-year-old sweet gum isn't that old. So I think it could potentially have a lot of life left in it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yeah. Thanks for waiting through the break. I appreciate
That's
your patience.
Okay. Got to hear the news and the weather.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks, Rosemary, for calling. 314-436-7900. Did you say 50 or 60 is not that old for a
Not for a lot of these big shade trees. I mean, there are trees out there that are, you know, hundreds of years old, but no, it's not too bad for a sweet gum.
Speaking of patient, Carol is up next. She's been waiting to ask a question of Michelle. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. My question has to do with
Unfortunately, we can't hear Carol very well. We have a bad connection. So if you want to call back and try again, we'll put you on first. In the meantime, we're going to go to Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. So I heard you talk, like, I think it was last week, that you have rhubarb in your home garden. And I have a question about rhubarb. So I got some plants, the roots, that are two different varieties this spring, and I planted them. And they started out really good. They came up with like five or six stalks and leaves, and the leaves got big. And then the leaves started turning yellow, and the stalks just dried up. And so there's just two or three small leaves and small stalks. Now the other one seems to be doing the same thing, where the leaves are starting to turn yellow. Am I watering it too much, or what was your thoughts?
This is going to go right back to my favorite topic, fungus. So without seeing it, it's really hard to tell, but I also know that rhubarb, one of its major problems, is fungal crown rot. And sometimes that could just have, you know, one side or a leaf or two turn yellow and kind of die back. It also can have, so that's one issue but that's very, very common. I think I've lost, you know, three or four rhubarbs over the year based or just from a fungal issue. So when you're planting those little root clusters, when you get those in that way, I always recommend trying to get the crown. It's almost like when you're planting a tree and they tell you to find the root flare, trying to get that above soil grade so that like the crown of that rhubarb doesn't necessarily have mulch or soil around it, because as that water, we had the really wet, cool spring, all of that moisture sits around the crown and it can slowly kind of die back.
Okay.
you can, it could still not be a problem. You said that there was one that still had a few leaves. So, you know, making sure you clean up those old leaves from around the base, keep stuff pulled back from the crown of the plant will help. And, you know, just watching that watering, we talked a little bit about letting things dry out. Rhubarb is another one that doesn't like to sit in wet soil. Okay. There are also pests and disease that rhubarb gets, snails and slugs and things like that. But I really suspect that with the weather that we've had this spring and the rhubarb's inclination to get these fungal crown rot issues, that that's probably your problem.
So normally, once the leaves, I know for the first couple of years, I can't harvest, right, to let it get stronger. So normally those leaves would just stay green. The stalks would stay there all all summer long. And then in the fall, they just
melt away. Yep. Kind of like a hosta. They're very similar to a hosta in their growth, the way that they grow. Hostas also have like those, like the underground root cluster that you can get, bare root. And then it sends up the stalks in the same manner that a hosta does, stays upright and green and healthy. You could you could technically harvest rhubarb all season long. It gets a little bit more bitter and you may not like the flavor, but you could harvest that rhubarb all summer. And then in the wintertime, just like a hosta, as soon as we get that first hard freeze, it will kind of melt back and you just kind of clean up all of those things and it will flush out new growth in the spring.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks for calling in. The number to call to ask your question of Michelle Reeser-West is 314-436-7900. Let's get back to Carol. Hopefully she's got a good connection now.
Good morning. I'm calling about established perennials in my yard. this is peonies, iris, coneflowers, hostas, that type. I want to dig and divide them this fall just because it's an easier job in the fall. But I want to wait and actually replant in the spring because I'm going to move them to another home in the Midwest. How do I overwinter these? How do I, can I put them in pots? And then how do I protect those pots through the winter?
So, yes, the short answer to that is yes. You can definitely put them in pots, and that's what I would definitely recommend. If you're going to dig them out, try to get a good root ball around the base of those to keep you know, the existing roots as established as possible. So if you can get a good root ball and a big enough container, this will go better. That being said, it doesn't have to. You could use like a 1 gallon container, or you know, even a pint would be probably fine on most perennials, but it will go better for you if you can get a larger root ball. And then what I would recommend is sticking them somewhere in your garden or somewhere that can be protected. You know, keep them kind of close together. We want to try to not have those root balls freeze too hard. So if you can put, let's say you have 12 of these containers that you're saving your plants, stick them as close together as possible. And then I would do some kind of compost or topsoil kind of mounded around and in between all of those plants. And you're just kind of healing them in. And then you can put something protective over the top, like leaves or straw or something like that. You're just trying to keep them. They're going to freeze if you keep them outside, but you're trying to keep them a little bit warmer and a little bit more protected. And then if they're out where there's natural rainfall and things like that, you probably won't need to water. You don't want these guys to dry out completely, which would also, you know, the leaves and things like that on top would also help retain some of that moisture. And then, you know, before things start coming back to life in the spring, I would pull some of that leaf material off the top so they can, you know, start warming up and start pushing through that leaf material. But as long as you get, you know, get a good root ball and get them out early enough, I think even doing it as early as possible, like September or October, to give them, you know, a little bit more time to get established in those pots before winter gets here. But I think you could be pretty successful with this.
Okay, thank you. And one other question. Do you have any luck with planting a fig tree outdoors and having it over winter? I know it's kind of iffy in this area, but where would you plant it in your yard in an attempt to back protect it
Yep, fig trees can. Yeah, fig trees can do quite well here. Getting a hardy variety that does well here. I know Chicago fig is one variety that does well. That's what I have in my yard. I'm drawing a blank on a couple other varieties, but look for a fig that does well in our zone. I would recommend personally planting a fig in the spring because figs have a lot of they're really root hardy here in our area, but the top part doesn't always make it through the winter. There could be a lot of winter damage on fig trees, especially when they're younger. So I would recommend a spring planting on a fig just so it has all season long to get its roots established. And then the same type of thing, you can really protect that root zone with some extra mulching or leaf and then pulling that back off. And I think I planted mine about two or three seasons ago. Last year, I pretty much had to prune it back to the ground from the winter damage. And then this year, I had more branches that made it through and I pruned off all that winter damage. And now it's taller than I am. It started, you know, a couple feet tall this spring. And now it's almost 6 feet tall. So it's doing really well. I have a lot of fruit on it. Again, this will be my third season of having it, but just make sure you get the right variety. I would plant it somewhere it gets good sunlight, especially for that winter sunlight, so it doesn't freeze as much. So an open area with full sun would be best.
Okay, I have the tree, and it is one of the hardy varieties, and I've had it in a pot in my home. Mm-hmm. This is the fourth year it bears fruit. It's kind of getting big for my house, so that's why I want to move it out. And I did some trimming back of the branches and just put it in water, and it had roots, and that cutting started producing fruit. So
right.
It seems to be pretty healthy. Okay, I'll try it in the spring. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck to you.
Thanks for your call, Carol. If you have a question for Michelle about your garden, your tree, shrubs...
Thank you.
314-436-7900 is the number. Again, the Garden Hotline is 314-436-7900. We'll continue with your phone calls and your questions for Michelle on 104.1 FM KMOX in just a moment.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
You're listening to the Garden Hotline on KMOX 104.1 FM, the voice of St. Louis. Here with you to answer your questions is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. And the number to call to ask yours is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Over the winter, people ask questions about transplanting. They keep them inside their house and they want to put them out in the yard when the weather gets better. What about summer into fall? Is it the same kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly can be. You know, our previous caller, Carol, was kind of talking about transplanting that rhubarb that she has in a pot out into the garden. You know, we talked earlier to somebody about transplanting those perennials from one house to a new house that she might be moving to next year. So transplanting is actually right now I'm starting to think about it in my yard. You know, I'm making a list of things that I want to transplant because, you know, a lot of perennials do very well, even shrubs. If I want to move something in my garden that's already there, or if I want to split them up and make more, which a lot of people do with their perennials like hosta and things like that, you can start thinking about that now. Like as I am working in my garden, I'm noticing that, you know, some things are getting a little bit overcrowded. You know, as I walk from my car to the front door, there are a lot of things maybe flopping and needing to be, you know, they've just gotten big over time. And this fall, I need to probably pop them out, split them up and move them elsewhere. I do a lot of editing. You know, my garden is constantly changing and moving. So, you know, as things get more established, they get bigger or they're competing with another plant. I like to just keep that list of what I might want to do this fall. September is a great time to be transplanting perennials or dividing perennials. Even shrubs, like I said, if you have like a shrub that's gotten too close to another plant or you just need it in a different part of your garden, you know, September is a great time for that. And the summertime is a great time to kind of get your list together and get your thoughts together so that when September gets here, you're ready.
314-436-7900 is the number. Let's go to Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Hi. I've got they're about 30-foot tall spruce trees in my yard, and I'm getting a lot of honeysuckle and vines growing underneath them. I was kind of curious when it would be a good time to maybe cut some of the bottom limbs off or if that's an issue with those type of trees or not.
You want to cut underneath of it. You want to cut the branches off of your spruce tree?
Yeah, on the bottom of it, just because of all the undergrowth that I'm getting underneath there, it's pretty dense under there. And somebody told me I'd just, you know, cut some of the bottom limbs off, but I just don't know if that's wise with those type of trees or if it's, you know, how high up to actually trim them back or cut them back. So I can get underneath.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can limb up a spruce or other evergreens. I'm not always a big fan of it, not really because of, you know, horticulture reasons. It's really just aesthetic for me. You know, I don't like the look of an evergreen that's been limbed up. But again, that's personal preference. If you're getting a lot of, you know, underbrush and things like that growing under there, it could, you know, it's probably more labor intensive to get in there and try to eradicate the honeysuckle. But for me, you know, just if we want to speak in terms of horticulture, spruce trees are much better for our landscapes than our invasive honeysuckle. So I would try to get rid of that honeysuckle as much as possible. And I might limb up that spruce tree a little bit so I could have some access or better access to get to that honeysuckle in the underbrush. And if you are talking about pruning, I mean, you can prune it now. You know, it's always fine to prune anything lightly. So if you're just removing one or two branches, that would be great. If you are going to do a major pruning or a major limbing up, I would probably wait until the tree goes dormant for that, so you can have a little bit less stress, a little bit less pest and disease issues. But, you know, and that would be pretty much January, February timeframe would be, you know, a major a time for major pruning. And then as far as how high you can limb these guys up, again, that's just going to be personal preference. I mean, they can be limbed up pretty high and still be, you know, pretty healthy. It's just going to be aesthetically what you like looking at and what the plants are around it, just so it doesn't look, you know, you don't want it to look kind of silly. Yeah. Once you get it up too high.
Yeah, it's aesthetically too. I'm the same way. I really didn't want to, but it's just getting so much under there. And I kind of thought evergreens, maybe it would be better to do it just in the warmer months in the winter. So, okay, I'm not going to cut up very high, but I'm just going to try and figure out something to do. But all right, appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Steve. 314-436-7900. Is the number to call. That's the Garden Hotline to ask your question of Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, and we'll continue with your phone calls in just a moment on KMOX. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Michelle Reeser-West answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Up next, we say hello to Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I live on East Side over in Illinois, and I have quite a few hostas in my front yard, and they're basically on the north side of the home. The weather has just burned up most of the variegated ones. The ones that are solid color seem to survive a little bit better. But what would happen if I cut some of these back? Would they recover before winter, or should I just leave them like they are?
So I would totally consider cutting them back. You know, hostas are a pretty tough plant. You know, there's a lot of reasons that we might need to cut them back. You know, they're affected a lot by sun exposure, or drought. They get a lot of slugs and bug damage a lot. We see a lot of storm damage with their big chunky leaves, you know, hail damage or just wind damage. They get also, just to hit on our today's favorite topic, they also get a lot of fungal issues and crown rot. So, but all of that being said, hostas are super tough, super resilient, and they can take, you know, some cutback. This time of year is not ideal, right? We're pretty hot and dry. But they should definitely recover. I think giving them a haircut, even if you're cutting them all the way back, they should within, you know, a couple of weeks start pushing out new growth. If you're going to do that, I would definitely recommend some consistent watering, some consistent deep watering, not overwatering, but just, you know, making sure that they're getting what they need to have the energy to push out some new growth. But certainly think that cleaning them up, it's going to look a lot better. And ultimately they're going to be healthier if you get the damaged or diseased plant parts away from it. So definitely.
Great. Okay. I really appreciate that. And that tells me what I'm going to do the rest of today.
So. Yeah. Have fun
Thank
out
you
there.
So much. All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling, Steve. The number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline to speak with Michelle Reeser-West and ask your question. Whatever's on your mind as we hit mid-July. Temperatures, thankfully, will be a little cooler for July, maybe a few degrees below normal. That's cool.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Upper 80s instead of 98, which we had yesterday. In terms of right now, thinking about the fall, you know, craving the cooler temperatures that we are, what do we need to think about in terms of the garden and watering? Watering is you know, we've gotten enough rain. We're not in drought. But what about watering right now?
Yeah. So, you know, watering is just, you know, it's something that you want to constantly monitor. You know, a lot of times I think about watering and changing watering in terms of holidays, which seems weird, but you know, Mother's Day in May, that's, you know, typically May, it's starting to heat up. Father's Day in June, if you haven't done an adjustment, it's really starting to heat up. We've just passed the 4th of July, which is also kind of an indicator for me to think about watering. And then really my next time I'm going to start thinking about watering is going to be that Labor Day timeframe, which we're going to start getting, you know, shorter days, hopefully cooler overnight temperatures. But for now, in, you know, we're here in mid-July and moving into August. You're right, we do have some average temperatures for St. Louis right now, but St. Louis doesn't tend to stay average. We like to work in extremes in weather lately. So I suspect that we're going to, you know, do what St. Louis weather does, and it's going to heat up. So through those times, just, you know, like we talked about earlier, consistent watering, having a schedule, deep watering as opposed to short little flashes of water. And don't be, you know, fooled by rain. You know, we got a little bit of rain here this morning, and that's not enough to water anything. It was just a trace amount. So a lot of times people think, oh, it rained today, I don't need to water. But a lot of times that's just not the case, especially if we've had a long period without rain before that. So, yeah, just consistent deep watering.
And you said, you know, in terms of checking the soil, making sure you go down far
enough.
Yeah,
get your fingernails dirty.
Get your fingernails dirty, because at the surface, it may look wet, but maybe below it's not.
Yeah, like, so if you went out this morning and you looked, it would look wet because it just rained. In fact, I'm looking out the window and I see wet surfaces, but it wasn't enough to do much. So you have to, you know, pull that mulch back, maybe get a trowel or something, and kind of just see how deep that water has penetrated the soil. But for perennials and shrubs, you need 6 inches of moisture for trees and things like that. I mean, they want water 12 to 18 inches deep. So I just think about where the root system is. So, but pulling back a little bit of mulch and soil a few inches down will help to tell if you need to get more water out there.
Michelle Reeser-West answering your questions at 314-436-7900, the Garden Hotline. And Bill is up next. Good morning, Bill.
Morning. I have a apple tree that has yellow spots on most of the leaves.
Okay. So, you know, we talked a little bit about fruit trees earlier in the show, and apple trees, definitely one of those that get these spots and get a lot of fungal issues. Typically, you know, the spots on the leaves aren't that big of a deal. It's typically just an aesthetic thing. So, you know, and then once those spots are there, that's typically a fungus. And, you know, there's not a lot you can do with fungus once it has arrived, other than, you know, if those leaves start to fall off, cleaning up anything that has fallen. You can, you know, spray those with a fungicide to help with its spreading. And, you know, that you could use things like copper fungicide or neem oil are two that are pretty readily available at our local garden centers and hardware stores. But, and again, thinning, I can't speak enough about thinning the canopy of your apple trees. We need to get air circulation going through there and light penetration. And that helps the moisture dry off the leaves a little bit faster.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Up next, let's go to Jason. Good morning, Jason. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, yes. I might have had a question. I have a flowering cherry tree, and I've had it for about 10 years, and I put, like, the bricks around it and put some soil in there and some flowers. And this year, I know it didn't bud too well. Like, it flowered, and then the leaves didn't come out like they usually do. And then now all of a sudden, the leaves are browning. So I was wondering what if it's dead or if I can, like, save it or...
So cherries can have a lot of pest and disease issues. Cherries can also, you know, just be finicky. You know, just like we were talking about with some of these other fruit trees, cherries, crab apples, things like that often, you know, do have a lot of issues. You know, the flowering cherry in St. Louis is known to get a lot of pest and disease issues. And if we were playing a drinking game where we drank when we talked about fungus, I'm going to say the word again now. Cherries can be very susceptible to fungus, especially our ornamental flowering varieties. So, and that can lead to browning leaves, dropping of leaves, things like that. So I would, you know, if you have branches that are bare, that the leaves have fallen completely off of, I would take your pruners or your fingernails or something sharp, go out there and scratch that, that top layer of the bark. And if it appears to be green, and moist, then the tree's probably still alive. You can also look for new buds that are forming. It might be trying to push out some new leaves. So if that's the case, then I would leave it alone. If you scratch that wood and it appears to be brown, it's dried out or brittle, I would recommend pruning that part out. I would say, you know, without seeing it, you know, and just the weather and the pest and disease issues that we've been having in St. Louis this year, that I would recommend probably just waiting and seeing. I know that's not, you know, it's not a perfect answer, but a lot of times with our, you know, these issues that are aesthetic, just waiting and seeing is the best approach. Also doing a neem oil, we've talked about that. If it is a bug problem, which it could be, could also have spider mites or aphids or something like that, which also discolors.
And somebody said the cicadas could have damaged it too when they came out last year.
Yeah, the cicadas can. If it is cicada damage, it's just the tips. You can look on the underside of your branches. I don't recall seeing a lot on cherries. I could be wrong, but that's not one that we're seeing, that I recall right. seeing a lot of damage on, but just look at the tips of those. The underside of the branch would have some scarring on it. And then
so
you would just,
yeah, there is scarring on the tree, but it's like, do you think that me having that dirt on the bottom of the tree with like flowers planted around it could have affected that too? Like maybe got too much moisture in there? Or?
It can. That can also be an issue. You know, trees don't like to have their crowns covered up. Most plants don't. So depending on the amount of soil, if you covered up that root flare, that might be an issue. So you always,
I took it off now.
Okay, good. Well, that will help. You know, if that was an issue, just keeping that root flare up above grade and from, you know, having all that moisture at the base.
All righty.
All right, good
Thanks
luck.
Thanks for calling in, Jason. We appreciate it. We've got one more segment to go. We've got a couple callers on the line already. So we will get to those right after a short break on 104.1 FM KMOX. Let's get back to your phone calls on the Garden Hotline with Michelle Reeser-West. We have Michelle on the line. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. about 3.5 weeks ago, prior to the 100-degree temperature, my cherry tomato plant that is potted in a 5-gallon container that sits on the patio, the leaves began to turn brown from the bottom up. They're a greenish, yellowish brown, mostly brown. I've checked for insects, and I haven't seen anything. Are you familiar with such a weird thing?
Yeah. Tomatoes have so many issues or can have so many issues. So without seeing it, it might be hard. So if we start with the bugs, which are a major problem with tomatoes sometimes, you know, one that's really been bad this year has been spider mites. And those are really hard to see. You can't actually... I mean, you can see the bugs, they're big enough to see, but you really have to be looking hard for them. And I typically would recommend taking out like a piece of white paper and putting it underneath the leaves and kind of shaking the leaves and see what falls off. And the spider mites look like really teeny tiny black dots. And if you kind of rub your hand across that paper, the spider mites will leave like a orangey brown streak. You can also tell you have spider mites if the leaves, I know you said they turned brown from the bottom up, but spider mites would be able to tell by looking closely at the leaves, and you can typically see some stippling or some little white dots. The spider mites feed on the on the leaves. So there'll be these white dots on the surface of the leaves. It's just a pretty good indicator that you have spider mites. You know, there's other pest and disease things, but most of those, if you're looking at the plant, you will likely see that you have some kind of an infestation. You know, the browning of the leaves from the base up makes me think that it could be a watering issue or a fungal issue. You know, that can happen if the pot that it's in isn't well drained or it just gets too much water over the course. You know, maybe you watered it every day. And then the flip side of that is, you know, if the plant happened to dry out one day, it's in a pot and maybe it got, you know, a little too dry one day, that could have affected the plant and it might have dropped a few leaves and the top might be fine and the rest of the plant might be fine. It's just, so are you, is the rest of the plant, like the top of the plant, looking really healthy and green?
It's not looking very healthy. Okay. It is green,
yeah.
And I do have some cherry tomatoes on it, but it's not; they're not ripening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the leaves, the coloring of the leaves is just an odd looking brown. somebody suggested neem oil.
Yes. Yeah, so neem oil is one of my go-to things that I recommend. It's an organic product. You can put it on our edibles, and it is both an insecticide and a fungicide. So if it's a fungal problem, it's going to help that. If there are bugs on it, it's going to help that. If you spray that, make sure you don't do it on a super hot day. You know, it is an oil. So we, you know, now that temperatures are higher, we want to be careful of the oil sprays that we're using. So do it in the morning or later in the evening, and then make sure you're getting the underside of the leaves, because a lot of these bugs that affect our plants are on the underside. They need protection from sunlight and water and things like that. So they feed on the underside of the leaves. So just make sure when you spray, you're taking care of both sides.
Thanks for the call, Michelle. Cliff is up next. Good morning, Cliff.
Good morning. Today I got a potted gardenia plant, and it had a tough time over the winter. I think it had definitely had too much foliage, and I trimmed all the dead stuff out, and it's recovering nicely out here on the patio. It's about 3 feet high now. My question is, how far back can I cut that before I take it in this winter?
So before you take it in, you know, I would be super hesitant to do a major haircut when you're changing its circumstances. You know, it's already going to be adjusting to the light changes and the temperature changes. So it's naturally doing its thing. So we really want it to focus more on that change and on sending energy to the roots. So I'm always hesitant to do any major pruning at that time. So a good time to do that type of pruning, you could do it now. That's going to affect your flower and the growth and things like that. So I think the best time for me would be, you know, in the late winter, early spring, before, you know, it's going to really start flushing out new growth. And then it can go in that way, or wait until you get it back inside and that it has some time to acclimate to its new conditions before you do any major pruning.
Thanks for calling in, Cliff. That is going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Final thoughts?
Fungus. And did you know, you guys, if you missed part of this episode, you can go on the Odyssey app and listen to it later. That's how my mom does it. Actually, I don't know if she actually does, but that's what my mom says she does. She listens later.
That is AUDACY, and it's free to download right now. All right. Thanks for tuning in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Thanks, Michelle. We'll see you next week.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.